Welcome back to the Man Cave Caucus Podcast, where you can catch a bit of all the news and commentary and be enlightened all in one place. Get the objective news, Tim, and all the Florida Man-esque comedy you can possibly handle. I'm your host, Ben Baker, and with me across the makeshift studio table is the one and the only Tim Holden, who just rolled in from a how-many-hour drive from Iowa?
It was only six.
Oh, that's not, shaved it not too bad.
Five and a half.
Just a road trip. Literally stepped right out of it into the Man Cave Caucus Podcast. And so Tim's here, just in the nick of time. And our full-time, part-time Googler, Detective Joel Mace, is stuck to the pleather Craigslist couch, like toilet paper to the bottom of your shoe.
Can't get it off.
What's up, Joel?
He wears a little bit of that couch home every evening.
So if you get a piece stuck to your shoe in from one of those grimy gas station bathrooms,
little truck stop bathroom,
do you actually reach down and pluck it out?
No, I do the old skid and roll it into it. If you rub your foot on some textured, you know, broomed concrete, mm-hmm. it just turns into like a elongated dingleberry on the concrete.
There you go.
Much like,
and then you can just brush it to the side.
Much like your typical dingleberry. Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. I appreciate the.
I'm somewhat heads of up an on expert. That.
The mental picture.
Right.
Yeah. Usually it's a pea-soaked toilet paper, so never reach. Mm. Never make the reach.
No, never. And so we are the Man Cave Caucus Podcast, for the better or the worst. We're here for you guys. And it's good to be back. But at the same time, things will never quite be the same. I feel compelled to talk a little bit about this since we have left our audience kind of up in the air for a few weeks, and we apologize for that. I think we've missed three episodes at this point, and hopefully y'all are still hanging in there waiting for us to come back on the show and come back on live. But the reason for that is since we recorded episode 42 here 3 weeks ago, there has been an unbelievable tragedy that has taken place in my family. And it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to talk about this, but I think it's important that we do. But on the night of May the 23rd, 3 weeks ago, my daughter and son-in-law were murdered in Haiti. I've never spoke their names or what exactly they're doing over there on the podcast to protect them, actually, and to make sure that, you know, it didn't draw undue attention to what they were doing there. But Davy and Natalie were married in June of 2022, and later that fall, they went to be full-time missionaries to Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And we've talked about Haiti several times on the podcast regarding the situation over there, what's going on, and all of that, but never really what, you know, that I actually had a daughter and son-in-law that were there. And so Davy and Natalie have been in Port-au-Prince since the fall of 2022. Davy grew up there. His mom and dad have been missionaries there for 26 years, I believe, before he was born. And so he wasn't born in Haiti. He was born in the States, but he grew up there, and Haitian Creole was his first language. They have a church there. They have an orphanage, a kids' home, and a school there as well, among the different ministries and the things that they do at missions in Haiti. We've talked about those conditions in Haiti before, especially after they really declined in recent months. And even through all that and the increase in violence and the things going on, especially in Port-au-Prince, they chose to stay. Davy and Natalie chose to stay. And the reason why is because they felt if they left, then the kids there that were under their care, which was more than 30 kids, at some point they probably had closer to 60 kids under their care. And if they left, those kids would have nowhere to go. Many of those are not technically orphans. They probably do have parents somewhere, but parents that cannot take care of them, cannot provide for them. And so they end up being a part of the mission there, and they raise those kids. And so I think we even talked about it on the podcast, but the airport was shut down for a while. It had just opened up the week that this all happened, just actually a couple days before this took place. And so David Lloyd Sr., which is Davy's dad, had flown home that morning, and they were scheduled to, Davy and Natalie were actually scheduled to come home for a few weeks. They were going to be coming home June the 12th. And so on the 23rd, Naomi and I were actually at a political event in Jasper County that evening. They put on a kind of a forum for candidates. And so some of the Jasper County candidates were there. Some of the statewide candidates were there. And we had just went to attend that meeting in Jasper County. And it was right before that meeting was getting ready to start. Actually, I had just prayed. They had asked me to pray over the meeting. We had just opened the meeting when we got the news that the compound there in Haiti, they where Davy and Natalie live and where the orphanage is and all of that, had been breached by a gang. And the first word we received was that they had been at a youth service and were just coming out of that with the kids when they were surrounded by a gang. They took them across the street. They beat Davy up and then took him across the street and tied him up and beat him up even more, and demanding that he tell them where all the valuables were, or they would kill Natalie. And he told them, of course, and they looted the house with all the valuables, including the few guns that they had there to defend themselves. And they stole two of the vehicles that were on the compound that belonged to the mission, and they packed those vehicles with all the valuables that they looted out of those two buildings, packed those with that stuff, and then they left. And that's when Davy had made contact with the States with his dad to try to get help. And then shortly after that is when we got the first word of what was going on. And so Davy's dad was communicating with Davy some and with some of the Haitian nationals there. There's a couple of young men that were basically raised on the compound there with the mission. One by the name of Jude, who was another young man that was killed in this instance. And then Jonas was a young man, I think he's 26 years old, that has basically grown up there as well from a small child and some of their close friends and helpers on with the mission. And so Davy's dad had been communicating with them somewhat, but they had taken their phones, and so he was relying on some of the, you know, the nationals there and calling their phones, and it was just difficult trying to communicate about what was going on. And so one of the things that Davy did, he was beaten up pretty bad and bleeding pretty bad, but he managed to get the big truck there that the mission owns in front of the gate because he was worried that they would come back. Which eventually his worries were well-founded. And that's where we kind of found out what was going on, is kind of in this interim between when the gang left and we'd found out that Davy had been beaten up, but Natalie was okay. And this is kind of where this begins, the several-hour saga that takes place. And I really can't describe how torturous it is to know what is happening in real time and being 1800 miles away, you know, in a third world country where there's no way to get there quickly, no way to intervene, no way to really do anything much, it seems like. And we were getting limited information in bits and pieces because, you know, Davy was on the phone some with Jude, I'm sorry, David was on the phone some with Jude and with Jonas, both of those young men, at different points in this. And when I first heard, I immediately began making calls to everyone that I could that might be able to, you know, get them help and get them help quickly. I called Congressman Eric Burleson. I called Senator Josh Hawley, and they immediately began trying to contact the embassy and other officials, anyone that they could reach out to that could send help in a timely manner. But you have to realize that Haiti is in such a turmoil right now with the government. There's almost, you know, no government in place. The police is in disarray because the gangs have killed a lot of the police. They have burned the police stations, and what police is left, you know, most of them are just as corrupt as the gangs themselves. And the embassy personnel is really, you know, there's only a few of them as well because of the situation there. And so they begin to try to contact the embassy. David was in contact with the embassy as well. This was on a Thursday night, and it was our kids that were here in the States. Our church has a Thursday night prayer meeting at our home church there. And since my daughters were there, we just went straight there from this political event to tell them what was going on and just to, you know, pray for the situation. So in the meantime, I'm communicating with different contacts, and it seemed like everything was a dead end. You know, no one was really willing at that point immediately to go get help. It was too dangerous. There wasn't enough, you know, people available, whatever it was. And they didn't have the people to do it. They were relying on the local police, and that's what they said. You know, we've contacted the local police. But again, that's just a futile effort. They're just as corrupt, and, you know, really not very capable anyway. And at one point they did say that the police may try to take an armored vehicle to the compound. But later we found out that they wouldn't do it because it was too dangerous, and they only had one armored vehicle that was available, and they felt like they needed more. So at this point, I'm trying to find a flight to Haiti. I'm trying to find some way that I can get there as quickly as possible, because as a dad, that's just what you know, what you want to do. You want to try to do everything that you can to be there for your kids. So I called multiple people that have airplanes, that are pilots, and really I got the same story. It's too difficult. It's too time consuming to get everything in order to fly there very quickly. And even if you did have all of that in place, you know, finding someone willing to do that is even a different story. Someone who has the insurance policy in place for their plane and all the different things, you know, flying into this situation in Haiti is just a very difficult thing. And so that was kind of what I was finding out with the contacts that I have. There were a few viable options of people who were willing to either volunteer and fly their own plane and try to get there through private airports, or a charter that would take us for, it would have been, I think, north of $30,000 for that flight to get there. And, you know, at that point, money was not even an option to me. It was just a matter of if something would be viable that we could, as an option that we could try. So we're trying to figure out a flight when we got word that the negotiations had broken down. And, you know, because David was working with them, you know, the Haitian nationals were there. Jude was there. Davey as well. They were trying to negotiate with the gangs. And at some point that broke down, and there's a lot of details. We still don't know. But the word that we received from the gang was that we killed both the white people. And that was just such an awful moment of heartbreak that I can't really describe, and pain that I felt in that moment. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was just like a nightmare, you know, like a bad dream. And then knowing that, you know, now I have to call family and I have to let them know before the word gets out. I had to call my dad and tell him, but I didn't want him and my mom to be alone when they heard the news. So I had one of my brothers go and be with them. I called Congressman Burleson and told him. And I was in the middle of making these calls when somebody yelled, you know, Natalie's still alive. And then for moments there, hope returned. They told us that they're trying to get her to a vehicle to get her help. And at this moment, I knew I had to go. Somehow I had to get there. So the last more viable contact that we had been in communication with that had a plane, had the ability, had everything to be able to get there, with that charter flight, we called him and said, pick us up in Joplin. And so our plan was to my brother-in-law and Davey's dad would meet in Joplin and take the charter flight to Haiti. So I ran home to grab a few clothes and, you know, praying at the same time when I'm trying to do this, you know, and I'm throwing the clothes into a backpack, and my pastor comes in the door with just agony in his voice, and he's crying, and he says, she's gone. And the anguish of those moments, I think, will probably haunt me forever. Because feeling so helpless, you know, that you could do nothing to help, and that is just a torturous reality. But what we found out later is at some point the gang, or a gang, did return. There are some who say that the second gang was a different one and that they were there to help, but there was no signs of that. They didn't act like it. They came in shooting, literally came in the gates shooting. Many of them were drunk as well. Some reports say close to 100 men in that second group that came back. And with them shooting and the chaos of the security guards shooting as well, one of the gang members was shot and killed and others were wounded. And again, there's many missing details. And that's another thing that's hard for me. You know, part of the agony of dealing with this as a father, especially, is just not knowing exactly what happened, not being able to do something about it. But what we do know is that the gang brutally murdered Davey and Jude. At one point, even doused them with gasoline, were going to burn them alive. We don't think they actually did that at this point. And Jonas was going back and forth, from the way I understand it, checking on the kids that they had sent over to hide. And when he comes back, he found Natalie on top of both of them. And she was still breathing. And so he tried to carry her out and get her to a car, but she expired when he was carrying her to the car. So earlier, the gang had at some point tried to smoke them out of the house that they were holed up in. And so the house was on fire. And at some point, somebody tried to put it out. And so Jonas, when he was carrying Natalie out, he made it to the porch. And that's where she died. And in Haiti, there's, I don't know whether it's superstition or whether it's their laws or whatever it is, but they're very adamant about not moving a dead body. And so they literally just left them there overnight. And at some point in the night, the house caught back on fire. And so because of that, Davey and Jude's body were burned badly as well, but not Natalie because she was on the porch. And then there was a long process to recover them. You know, we worked with a group in Haiti that I'm so thankful for. I've never met these people. David knows a few of them, but the way I understand it, there's several Americans involved, and they run an ambulance service and a recovery operation of sorts for these kind of things. Some of these men are ex-military personnel that volunteer their time to do this, and others as well. But they were able to put together a team to go recover Davey and Natalie from the compound and get them to the embassy. And it's one thing to know, you know, that they are dead and that, you know, and in the way in which that happened. But it's another then to know you might not get them back. And so this process took over a week to finally get them home safe. We worked with the embassy there and others to figure out that process. And, you know, there's documentation that's involved. And the first big obstacle that, you know, the embassy said, you know, this is our biggest problem, is having or finding an airline that will be willing to transport them from Port-au-Prince, given the circumstances. And the other issue there, the second big hurdle, is embalming is an issue there because there's no mortuaries left at this time that have the capability, because of the conditions in Haiti and the danger there. Most of them have left. And one of the things that most transport airlines require is that the bodies have to be fully embalmed before they will transport them. And there was no hope for that. And so then it was a matter of if there would be somebody who had a waiver, you know, and say, we'll do it anyway, or if there was some way that they could partially embalm them. And so, you know, that was the second biggest obstacle. And then there was the safety issue. So, you know, once this all made national news, and, you know, then the word on the street was that the gangs were upset, what the embassy was communicating to us, the gangs were upset because this got so much attention. And, you know, so they were threatening things, and we didn't know if transport from any, because once they were safe at the hospital that was real close to the embassy, they didn't know if, you know, any transport from there to a mortuary or from a mortuary to the airport or whatever would even be possible and safe to do that without a lot of, basically a lot of military personnel. And so then there's, you know, because of that, multiple calls every day trying to work out this process, calls with the State Department, calls with the embassy, calls with the FBI. And that's one that later I want to talk about at a later time, is the call with the FBI. But not at this point. But the contact that I had at the embassy there was very helpful. I really can't thank him enough. He really worked hard to expedite this on his end and do everything in his power to get the documentation. And really, I was completely relying. We were completely relying on him to do this. You know, again, you're having to contact government officials when many of them are, you don't even know if they exist any longer or if that position exists any longer. And you're trying to go through this process to get these documents signed. It's just, it's the craziest thing I've ever went through, just this process. So I made calls. There were many here in the States that helped tremendously, and I can't thank them enough. Congressman Burleson, Senator Josh Hawley, Lieutenant Governor Kehoe was another one that really weighed in on this. Congressman Graves as well, and many, many others. But eventually, and so our first option was really to pay a charter flight to transport them back, that they would be willing to do it even in a partially embalmed state. But it would have been thousands and thousands of dollars, and they could only get them to Florida. And then we would have to get them from Florida to Missouri and all of this. But eventually, American Airlines agreed that they could guarantee us a flight to bring them back all the way to Kansas City, Missouri, which was just a miracle, actually. And then the funeral home from here would pick them up in Kansas City. And so that was huge. We had agreed to pay a charter to get them back, whatever we had to do, you know, to get them home. But American Airlines agreed to do it for free. And that was another miracle. And so we went to Kansas City with the funeral home to pick them up. And I can't tell you, like, this was such a huge relief just to be close to them now and know that they're finally safe. Even though it's very difficult that you would never see them again and never have that closure, but it was just a huge relief to know that they were safely home. And the highway patrol provided an escort all the way back to Neosho from Kansas City. So I want to thank them for that effort and being involved with that as well. And when we got close to home on that trip back, I couldn't believe it. There were hundreds of people that were standing out by their cars on the side of the road with their hand over their heart. Local law enforcement with the city and with the county joined in that procession as well. There were entire businesses with their employees standing out by the highway as we came through, all through the downtown area around the funeral home, people just standing in respect. And it was a moving moment when they finally made it home. Some of my dear friends that were there to just help them get them out of the funeral home vehicles and into the funeral home. And so at this point, we were finally able to actually schedule services. And the response from so many has been unbelievable. Our community is amazing, and how we stick together in the hard times is quite remarkable. I think they said that there were close to 3,000, if not over 3,000, that attended the visitation, over 1,500 at the memorial service. I mean, every day in our mailbox, we get still, you know, a week later, we are getting a mailbox full of cards almost every day from people all over the world sending their condolences and their kind words. It's unbelievable. And I think about that, and I think, you know, that Davey and Natalie have reached millions because of their commitment to just reach a few. But I want to take this opportunity to say thank you. I really haven't got to do this. I've had so many calls, so many messages, so many emails. It's overwhelming. I can't even keep up with it. But I do want to say thank you for all the prayers. Thank you for all the support. It's meant everything to me and to my family. Thank you to all those who made food, who just came by the house here to be with us during this time. Even those that, and really there are no words, you know, but just having people that you love be there, is a powerful thing that you can gather strength from in a time like this. Thank you to all those who helped in the process of getting them home. Thank you to President Trump for caring enough to mention Davey and Natalie and to give us a call. I forgot to tell you guys about this. So we're sitting in the house, you know, I've got family here from all over. Naomi has family here from all over during this time. And you know, it's kind of loud in there. And I'd been getting so many calls and texts and from numbers, you know, I don't know who they were, and many of them I just couldn't even get to. But I'm sitting on the couch, and we're talking with family, and my phone rings, and it says no caller ID. And so I just jump up and go to the office and shut the door so I could have a little bit of quiet to answer the call. I had no idea. And so I answer the call, and he just says, "Ben, this is Donald Trump." And I couldn't believe it. And I mean, the most down-to-earth conversation, it would just like if I was talking to one of you guys. And for almost 7 minutes, you know, began to offer his condolences and talking about how this should never have happened, how evil it was, how beautiful the lives of Davy and Natalie was and their example and what they were doing there. And then he wanted names. Like he said, "I want to know who these people were. I want them to be brought to justice." And he said, "You know, if I were president, it might not have ended up like this." And I don't doubt that. I really do think that action could have been taken quicker. I really do. If the right people would have made those decisions. But just the fact that he took time out of all the things that he's under, imagine the stress and the things that he is under right now. The middle of this trial and all of that, you could hear the exhaustion in his voice. But the fact that he took the time out to call me and my wife and talk to us regarding the loss of our children, I thought meant a lot. I didn't get a call from Joe Biden. I didn't get a call from anyone in this administration. And I would have been respectful. I would have made mention of it if they would have. But I truly believe that he does care about people. And that too often he gets painted as someone that's very different than who he really is. And so, sorry we had to take a break for a few weeks. I had to focus on my family, you know, trying to get through this. I couldn't even really think of anything else. And I know a lot has happened in the political world since then, and we'll get to that starting next week. It can wait, though. There's a lot of things that I'm learning through this. You know, I've talked about grief before. I've taught about grief before. But there's nothing that compares to actually experiencing that on this level. There's a lot of things I'm learning through this and my family. It's not easy, but I'm definitely trying to reprioritize some things, that's for sure. And I can tell you in the moments of a tragedy like this, you know, many of the things that you thought were important to you are really not at all. When you would literally trade all of that for one more hug with your loved one, you realize pretty quickly what's really important. So what my advice would be is hug your family today. Tell them you love them. Take time for them, because you never know how much more time you might have with them. And in the end, you know, you're never going to say, "Man, I wish I could have worked one more day," or "Man, I wish I could have made another dollar." I can promise you that's not going to even be anywhere near the thoughts in your mind. I've mentioned this before on different interviews, but Natalie had these words on her Facebook bio, and I think it was a message that Davy preached at one point, but he said, "I want to live intentionally in the light of eternity." And her example and Davy's example of doing just that, I think has sparked a powerful movement, especially among young people, to take that into consideration and to think about it more seriously. So next week we'll get back to our regularly, you know, scheduled shenanigans like we always do on the Man Cave Caucus podcast, and we'll get back to doing that. But until then, keep us in your prayers. We sure do need them. And I do appreciate everyone who has been praying. Tim and Joel, appreciate you guys, man.
Appreciate you, Ben.
Sorry this episode was a little different, but I do appreciate you guys and appreciate your support through all of this as well. It means a lot to me. So with that, God bless you guys. God bless.